And I think others like David Lee and Joan Phillips were defeated at that election. So in a sense, the incoming council, that six-all bind of the first year, history showed that disappeared, and the whole metro town concept was forgotten.
Do you think some other aspects of the Lauder and Bailey work did go on, though? I'm thinking at this stage as to whether they proposed the cell planning that developed in Endeavour Hills and other areas.
Yes, they did. And if you looked at Endeavour Hills, for example, now, I think that some of the hilltops are still kept as parklands.
Mm-hmm.
There is enormous, I can't remember the names of the roads, but there's the traffic pattern through there is very relatively safe and well designed. And there's one major road that went through there, because one of the things that was built into that road fabric was the potential in due course that fixed mini rail transport linked to Dandenong could be something of the future. And John Loder in particular had then and has developed since then enormous expertise on that fixed rail transportation. Well, it hasn't come to the city of Berwick, it's certainly come to the city of Sydney and a whole range of others, and one day it might come to Berwick, but perhaps not in Endeavour Hills. But those cellular panes, public open space integrated, separation of vehicles from pedestrians.
Yes. Preserving the water courses.
Yes. Linking public facilities garden setting, so that the whole community can take benefit of it instead of integrated into the actual fabric of the housing. And I'm sure there are a lot of others. I mean, the green break's still there, but that's probably there because of the easements which go through from the SEC. The separation of the secondary industry on the south of the highway, so that you've got a highway buffer at least between secondary industry and urban development, and that's evident in Narrewarren and Helm.
Yeah, Max Borsi has said to me that although the plan fell through, there were lots of aspects of it that he was able to gradually reintroduce and keep on the boards.
Yes. And you'll meet that. Then there are probably others, but I've forgotten.
There was an idea in it about putting cars on some sort of track that they... I've forgotten. Intelligent roads or something like that. Did that ever get much of a hearing?
Oh, all of those ideas got a hearing because we were being advised by a person who, in fact, has got some international notoriety now. John Loder, for example, I think he recently won a contract for the movement of people by conveyors, which, of course, those of us go on aeroplane into major terminals these days, it's par for the course. A lot of people consider it was absolute arrant nonsense to even think about them, but fortunately there were some people around who had some vision and saw that where things were going. So they were always taken seriously by a majority of people, but they were well debated. Well debated.
Any other people that you want to mention at this stage? Do you want to just make a brief word about you later, continuing your career into federal politics?
Yeah, well, having been defeated in 1974, I think a lot of the supporters and pro-planning people continually met in each other's homes. Who was it? Was it Chifley? It said something about a light on the hill. We were still had the light on the hill that ultimately we may go back into council, or we'd back other people who'd be pro to planning to go back into council. We may have even called ourselves something too. I can't remember what it was. Somebody remember that? But there were some wonderful people around the city, and they're still here, who were very supportive. But from there, I, having had, I suppose, 3 years of public life, was persuaded to join a political party and stand for pre-selection for the federal seat of Macmillan. I didn't win the first time, but learnt a lot. I thought I knew a lot from pretty tough local government elections.
So which election did you stand for? Was that the 75?
74. I sought pre-selection, which could have led me to being a candidate in 74, but I didn't succeed in getting pre-selection. But I went the second time for the 1970, what turned out to be the 1975 right. election.
Mm.
And so I was pre-selected for that and went in on the landslide of Mr. Malcolm Fraser and held the seat for 2 terms or 5 years.
Right.
And I suppose, just to finish off a very quick history, having been defeated, I then worked for approximately 2 years with Andrew Peacock, who initially was the Minister for Industrial Relations in the Fraser government, as his senior private secretary.
In 74 and 5?
That was post my defeat, so it was in 1980,
all right.
81, 82, and then had a falling out with Mr. Fraser, which led to my resignation, which led to Andrew's resignation, which led to me ultimately coming back under his staff to be part of a campaign to replace the Prime Minister, which was brought to a head by the Prime Minister in early 1983, in which Andrew Peacock was defeated quite substantially. But we took on the Prime Minister. I resigned soon after and established my own business, lobbying business, and then for 9 years ran that in Canberra. Had a period in Hong Kong giving advice to a group of companies as a consultant, run by Li Ka-shing, who's obviously from mainland China but had been in Hong Kong for many years, richest man in Hong Kong, who owned Star TV, which eventually bought by Murdoch. Then came back to Canberra, and then for personal reasons back to Melbourne, back home, and starting to do some more work for the City of Bury in 1994.
Thank you very much.
One aspect which I think probably ought to be recorded, because there aren't too many of the participants left. Lord Casey, as I'd indicated, very kindly took part in that on the 1st of October 1973, on the Proclamation Day for the City of Berwick. Through Councillor Peter Ronald, who wore many hats apart from being a well-known identity in Pakenham, he was also chairman, I think, of the Royal Agricultural Society and held a number of other positions. Lord Casey clearly knew Peter Ronald fairly well, and he approached Peter Ronald as an intermediary with the idea that as he was the local lord, that he ought to have an ongoing relationship with the then mayor of the new city. And I remember I and my family were living in temporary home, well, it was a lovely home, but it wasn't our own home because we were in the middle of moving. Lord Casey arriving to this home with Peter Ronald as to do the introductions, and Lady Casey to have afternoon tea and to establish the first contact between our respective offices. And that was a very pleasant and interesting afternoon. I wish I had known more about his background and Lady Casey's background and their history than I do now, because I read in one of the biographies on Casey that he was a very lonely man at that time, and I think he could have taken a much greater part in civic affairs, and I think he would have enjoyed it. From then, we had a number of occasions. For example, an honorary position, I think I was made patron of the Boy Scouts Association of this region or something of that nature. And that was done at Edrington, and Lord Casey took part. And I'll always remember, he said, come up and have a drink before the ceremony starts. And it was a Saturday morning, and Lord Casey couldn't find any ice, couldn't find any tonic, probably remembered back to his days in India, and offered me neat gin, warm. And I've never been able to face gin again in my life. Oh my God. But that was fun. One of the sadder occasions, as Lord Casey became older, we kept up regular meetings, and we certainly, I kept him informed on what we were doing in relation to the planning of the city and so on, knowing his interest as a result of that Reed Committee, of which I had ultimately been a member. And he did finally indicate that he was getting upset where that planning process was going, because he thought that we were heading down a track where all of that beautiful property of Edrington was going to be built on with houses. And we tried to reassure him that we were looking rather at things like what the Reed Committee had proposed in relation to his property. Because it's a beautiful area and Edrington's a beautiful old home, and so much of that land should have been retained, should be retained as public open space or farmland as long as possible, and certainly not be just five houses to the acre. So we organised a meeting again one Saturday morning, a very cold morning, and we all crowded into a small sitting room with the fire burning and with one of those old brass surrounds to the fire hearth, mm-hmm. where there were two stools at either end. Mm-hmm. And those attending were Pat Northeast, I think Max Pawsey and I, representing the city, Lord and Lady Casey, and to our amazement, Lady Casey's solicitor. And the discussion, the initial discussion was between Lord Casey and myself, and I tried to explain where we were and what we were doing. And it became quite evident that he wasn't listening and didn't believe me when I was saying that we weren't going to develop his property, or weren't proposing that in this planning process that his property would be rezoned and developed as totally as housing. And finally, Lady Casey said to him, because he was being so persistent and not listening and kept on coming back and back and back and kept on going, she finally said, Dick, shut up, to everybody's amazement, and perhaps not to his. And with that, he sat on one of those little corner brass things near the fireplace, a very, very old man, head down, hands tucked round his knees, tightly closed together, and took no further part in the discussion. And then the dialogue, and that was quite an embarrassing and sad scene. And then the dialogue continued between Lady Casey and her lawyers and ourselves. And I think, certainly there were no minutes out of it, I think there was a clear understanding by Lady Casey and her legal advisor of what we had done so far in relation to our planning proposal and where we were heading in relation to our planning proposal. What ultimately their views were after I left, I've got no idea, but I was always rather sad that I hadn't spent more time or encouraged Lord Casey to be more involved, because I think it would have been historically valuable and personally very valuable to a man who was clearly a very lonely man at that stage.
And Lady Casey was a great supporter of the Mechanics Institute at Bury.
If I can just mention that, the Mechanics, one of the difficult decisions that had to be made, I think, by the old Shire of Berwick, was when the Regional Council was formed, the Regional Library Service was formed.
I would think so, yeah.
And what potentially was to happen was that the Regional Library was likely to totally absorb and take over the book stock of the Berwick Shire Berwick Mechanics Institute Library, which was perceived, I think correctly, that that would virtually be the end of this then tiny little library run by volunteers, beautiful people, and everybody knew everybody, knew what you read and what you liked, and advised you on the latest book was in. We fought that and succeeded in having a special arrangement made with the library, retaining its existence on the main street, and of course it's since grown, I think doubled in size, but people like Pam Darling and, and her team of people are still there and still playing a major role. And I think Noel Stevenson was also perhaps the chairman of the committee. Yes. And that was a wonderful little community exercise, because it's what strengthens the community. It's certainly one of the strengths, was then and still is, I think, the strength of the Berwick community, which got your own little library, and it's, it's run by people you know and people who love books and so on, and love Berwick. Whilst I wasn't directly involved, one of the things that ultimately happened, there were two major collections of works in the area that I was aware of. One was Trevor Kilvington's, who had first edition, I think they were first edition copies of every Pelican, Penguin, Puffin book published ever. It was a massive collection which he had in his home. And I don't know whether we'd had informal discussions with Yvonne and Trevor Kilvington about whether that could be in due course left to the people of Berwick, because Trevor loved the Berwick people and he lived here, and Yvonne the same. But I don't think that went to the Berwick Mechanics Institute Library. I don't quite know where it went to, but that was one collection that that Comms had our eye on, in a sense, and with the greatest respect. The other one was the collection of Lady Casey's, and that I understand it ultimately, or a large part of it, go to the Berwick Mechanics Institute Library. And that, I am quite sure, would not have happened if that Berwick Mechanics Institute Library had been totally absorbed and swallowed up into the regional library system.
That concludes the interview with Mr. Simon. During the course of the interview, he also mentioned his house on Nyiora North Road having been designed by Robin Boyd, the architect, and he was also involved in the preservation of the Boyd paintings in another house in Nyiora North. I think it was the Grange where those paintings were, and they were in danger of being destroyed with the house, so he was also involved in that.